Hello and welcome to the All-Star Break edition of the Keeper Cup podcast. I'm Chad Young, joined by Pete Ball. We're not quite to the All-Star Break. There's a few innings of baseball left, but we're recording this Sunday afternoon. By the time you hear this on Monday, yeah, it'll be the All-Star Break. The Guardians will have a new, maybe top prospect, arguably top prospect, once that draft happens in a couple hours. All sorts of fun stuff coming up. Pete, how are you feeling about the first half of the season, both fantasy season and the real baseball first half?
Real baseball first half, it's hard to complain. Just from a baseball fan perspective, we're getting historical performances all over the place. So Tani and Judge are just so, so good at hitting. I feel like it's almost taken for granted what they're doing. We have exciting rookie performances and stuff like that, but the Red Sox are actually somehow performing really well. And on the broadcast today,
in a wild card spot and with a couple games to spare. I mean, they're two games up on Kansas City now.
Yep, they took two from Kansas City. They beat the Yankees in a series recently, so they're playing really well. They have a gauntlet of a schedule coming up, but Craig Breslow, their GM, essentially said on the broadcast today, well, whatever his title is, he's the baseball decision maker that changed under Dombrowski, president of baseball operations, that we're basically buyers. Like, he said as much, which as of even as recently as like 2 days ago, it was still somehow up in the air. But we are actually buyers, according to him. So should be exciting to see what they get done at the deadline. They don't need one starting pitcher. They need like two starting pitchers and a right-handed bat. And it is a seller's market, so it could get ugly out there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm feeling the same way about, you know, the Guardians. I think they have to come away with at least one starting pitcher. And I sort of agree for them, maybe two as well. It's funny because, like, you know, the Guardians are five games ahead of Boston right now. They have the best record in the American League by half a game over Baltimore. By half a game over Baltimore, but they're scuffling. And so it's a little bit more nerve wracking right now. And the All-Star break is coming at a good time. They could use a few days off, but in terms of it being, you know, the season as a whole, I mean, there've been some, you know, incredible performances. We've also had some just great fun stories. I mean, David Fry for a while was just lighting the world on fire. Now he's not, but he was for a while. Rhys Hines has been absolutely insane for a week now, which is sort of crazy. There's been a lot of fun stuff going on. You've got a rookie who didn't even start opening, like who wasn't even on the opening day roster as the NL starting pitcher in the All-Star game, and totally deserves it because Paul Skenes has just been that good. It's been really fun. You know, you talked about it being a seller's market. I mean, in the AL right now, you've got Oakland, LA, and Toronto are out of it. Those teams are sellers, and they should be sellers. Then you've got Texas, Detroit, and Tampa sort of in this in-between-ish space. And Tampa probably ends up selling, but I don't know. Detroit, I'm guessing, is going to sell Flaherty, but they're not going to make any big moves, right? I mean, Flaherty will be a big name on the market because a lot of teams need pitching and there isn't much pitching available. But like, I don't think Texas is going to sell. So you're really only looking at a handful of teams selling. And in the NL, there's only three teams more than four games out right now. And that's Washington, Colorado, and Miami. And there aren't a lot of super exciting names for any of those teams to move, right? Like, I don't think Colorado is trading a pitcher that either your Red Sox or my Guardians or anyone else is excited about. Maybe Miami does. The Nats, like, they probably are trading Jesse Winker. They already traded Hunter Harvey. Maybe they trade Finnegan. But, like, there's not a ton that they should be moving, I don't think. So there's not a lot out there. And there's a lot of teams that think they need what's out there. So it's going to be real interesting to see what goes down.
It would be a huge difference maker if Texas does decide to sell, because they have quite a few pieces that would actually be appetizing.
Yeah.
Between Eovaldi and Scherzer alone, I mean, they could really, really cash in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Haney would be a an intriguing target. Oh,
why not get rid of him? Jesus.
So there's a lot they could do, but I don't know. I don't think they're going to sell. So anyways, but let's jump into our jersey number discussion. This is episode 143. This is about the point in our jersey number cycle where these conversations start getting real thin. And so, you know,
I feel like we
number
just...
43
oh, no,
is basically Dennis Eckersley. And like, there's a handful of other people who wore it occasionally. Schilling wore it early in his career with the Orioles. Kevin Brown for 1 year, Lou Whitaker for 1 year. There's not a lot there. And so if you look at guys who wore it for like most of their career, and even Eckersley, he didn't wear it his whole career. He didn't wear it when he was in Cleveland, for example, but 21 years for Dennis Eckersley, the next best player to wear it for, you know, 10 plus years is Raul Mondesi. And the third best is Gary Peters. So it drops off pretty quick. I'm pretty inclined to call this the Eckersley episode. He's got some Boston connections. He's got some Cleveland connections. Although my favorite Eckersley memory is a Cleveland memory, but it's not a positive one for him. He gave up a walk-off, I think, grand slam to Manny Ramirez in 95 when Manny was still like, you know, an up-and-coming kid. And the cameras caught him walking off the mound, just mouthing, wow. Just because it was almost like he thought he made his pitch and Manny was like, nah. Which, you know, as a Red Sox fan, you know, Manny did that quite a bit. Like, pitcher makes the pitch and Manny's like, nah, I still feel like hitting this out. And there's nothing you can do. So
one of the best writers.
Unless you have an argument with it, I'm good calling it the Eckersley episode.
Well, I'm certainly not going to call it the Patrick Sandoval episode. So yeah, I'm good with Dennis Eckersley.
All right. And then our other introductory topic each week is our new head-to-head heroes. And there's some good candidates this week, I think. So, Pete, I'll let you go first. I've got a name in mind, but I'll see if you take my name for your head-to-head hero for this past week.
Sure. I mean, I wish I could have back 2 weeks ago where we predicted them and I said Nolan Jones. And then everybody on the Rockies had an amazing week besides Nolan Jones. And I remember thinking, like, maybe I'll go with Brenton Doyle, but I have him in so many spots that I didn't want to jinx it. And so I obviously messed that up. So sorry, folks, but I guess it doesn't matter. I'm going to go with I want to just take the homer pick and go with Devers, but I feel like that's not really that exciting. Rhys Hines is an obvious one, but I'm not going to take him. I'm going to go with Alec Burleson, who, just continues to hit. Like, if you look at his stat line, man, Alec Burleson has done an incredible job this season. Over the last week or so, he's 12 for 31 with four homers, batting .387, 11 RBI. So he was a little bit of a league winner last week, this week, whatever you want to call it, because we are recording on Sunday. And he's been amazing, and it shouldn't be like too surprising. When he first got called up, he obviously didn't make much of an impact, but he was coming from AAA with some pretty incredible numbers. Like, he's way more a bat prospect than anything else, and he's delivered this year. That strikeout rate is just 13.7%. That's after a 13% mark last season, so I think it's safe to say he's pretty good at the plate. Launch angle's up a little bit, which I guess explains the power, but it's still just a 7.7% barrel rate. And from what I've read, he's not supposed to be some massive power hitter, but he's 17 home runs in the first half, 17 home runs and 340 plate appearances. I'm not in love with that Cardinals offense, but man, he's just finding a way to consistently make an impact. There's no real like pitch that he's struggling with. His expected batting average against fastballs, .282, against breaking balls, .242, and against off-speed pitches, .355. He's lifting the ball a ton. Over 50% of the balls he puts in play is in the air. I'm having a hard time finding something to not like about Alec Burleson. I feel like it's all there, and it's just coming together for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with that. I mean, he's been terrific. I keep thinking he's gonna like lose playing time or things are gonna fall off, and it just it just doesn't happen. And so I feel like I'm late in really sort of buying in at this point, because I kept expecting the other shoe to drop and it just hasn't.
Yeah.
And so I have some regrets about that, but I think that's a good pick. I think looking at my pick, I considered a few different guys. I mean, you mentioned Reese Hines. I think we have to at least talk about like the insane start to a career Reese Hines has had. I held off only because Reese Hines, like the obvious comparison people are making is yep. Aristides Aquino. And because, yeah, how could you not, right? I mean, incredible starts, both in Cincinnati. The difference is that Aquino, when he came up, was a prospect who was hitting well in AAA. Hines has had a 76 WRC plus in AAA this year. Like, I mean, I commented somewhere like, not only is it crazy what he's doing, it's kind of crazy that the Reds called him up at all. Like, why did they call this guy up? He's been awful. So I don't really buy into it continuing, but man, it's been crazy while it's going on.
Strikeout rate in AAA was 37%.
30, yeah. Just nuts. Yeah. Just wild. Cal Raleigh's had a big week. Colt Keith, who we'll talk about in a little bit because I want to talk about some trade talks I'm having. Matt Wallner's back and he's got three home runs already, or some two home runs in a week since coming back. I considered, I'm going to take a moment. My pick 2 weeks ago for that forward looking week was Reynaldo Lopez. Two starts. I know he's got Philadelphia. He went 12 innings, three earned runs, eight strikeouts, three walks, got a win across those two games. I commented that Philadelphia's offense wasn't as good with some of the injuries they've had, and he shut them out for six innings. Eight strikeouts, only one win in the two starts. And so I'm going to go to a different pitcher, and I am going to acknowledge right now that this is a little risky because this guy is literally in the middle of his second start of the week as we speak. He's gone. So Blake Snell, you know, he's only been back off the IL for two starts. He started the year on, you know, slow, went on the IL, was not very good when he came back, went on the IL again, has now been back for two starts, including the one that is ongoing as we speak. In the start on the ninth, five innings, three strikeouts, three walks, one hit, no runs. You'd like to see more strikeouts from him. That's a lot of walks, but if you give up no runs, it's unfortunate he didn't get a win in that one, but still pretty good. Today's start so far, and the other crazy thing of this is he was throwing a perfect game as of 10 minutes ago, and then he gave up a hit, and immediately two pitches later erased that guy on a double play. So he is now through seven innings on 80 pitches, which who knows how many pitches he's got in him today, but through seven innings, 80 pitches, eight strikeouts, no walks, one hit, no runs. The Giants have to hold on to a lead for him to get a win, but that gives him over his two starts now, 12 innings, 11 strikeouts, five base runners, no runs. Wow. He did wonders for you in your head-to-head leagues if you were starting him in those two starts. We will see if he, you know, we'll see if he comes out for the eighth. I'm going to guess he won't. At 80 pitches, given the injuries and all that stuff, with the perfect game and the no-hitter off the table, I don't know. I'll keep you updated. I think he's probably not going to come out. Then the Giants have to hold on to get him a win. He will. If he doesn't come back in, he's at least locked up that quality start. So that's pretty good. But yeah, Blake Snell, he looks like he might be back. Blake Snell might be back.
So fingers crossed. I was trying to give him away in that podcasters league. Like I was willing to just sell low. I felt like this was a lost season for him. And now I'm feeling pretty good that people rejected that. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah. Get him going down the stretch here. See what he can do. I'm glad I've got him in a couple of places. And same thing. I was trying to sell him in the off season, trying to sell high, and just nobody was biting. And said, all right, fine, I'll sit. Now we got to get into our official topics for the episode. Got a couple of things we want to talk about. And I think we'll start by doing a little trade talk. I've got a lot of trade talk going on. We're getting closer to trade deadlines in fantasy leagues. Not there yet. Another few weeks, anywhere from 4 weeks to 6 weeks for most leagues at this point. And trade talk has gotten intense in some of my leagues. And I got to be honest, you know, at the beginning of this episode, Pete, I asked you how you were feeling about the season at the midpoint, both from a fantasy and from a real baseball perspective. And then when I talked about it, I talked about what a great real baseball season it's been. And I ignored fantasy, and that was only semi unintentional. My auto new leagues. Actually, this is kind of crazy. I was about to say I am not in first place in any auto new leagues this year. And then I pulled up my dashboard and I'm in first place in two auto new leagues. Things have turned around a little bit in at least a couple of those. So I have now retaken first place in the Podcasters League and in our Listener League. I'm in first in both of those. Otherwise, I am in 7th, 4th, 5th, and 9th. The one that I'm in 4th is our League 13, which is our head-to-head league. And I actually think my team is 2nd in total points. It's just 4th in record and should make the playoffs. And I feel good about that team. The rest of those teams, like the team in 3rd is, I want to say it's 3rd in points per game and 11th in points per inning pitched. That team is not going to hold on to third place the rest of the way. The team in fifth is further back, and I've already started selling with that team. The teams in 7th and 9th are really the ones I want to talk about today. Outside of auto new, it's been sort of mixed. I've got my CBS league that I usually do pretty well in. I should make the playoffs, but I've been in a tailspin the last couple of weeks in that one. Our shared team in that Dynasty League started by Matt Heckman has fallen on hard times, Pete. We might need to think about
time the to future. Trade Ozuna.
We'll have to see. It might be time to trade Ozuna. It's been sort of a weird year. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on the trade market, because I think there's some interesting names being kicked around in some of my trade talks that are worth us discussing and giving people thoughts on sort of what you should be doing here. And we're going to start with League One. So the original auto new league, this is a 4x4 league. The thing to keep in mind with 4x4 versus, you know, for those of you who play points or something like that, is 4x4, the salaries don't go quite as high at the top end. And that's why I've got a $60 Juan Soto on the trade block, because as good as Soto has been, $60 is a really high price in a 4x4 league. Now, I will say my other, like in a league 1199, my food and travel league, the team in first place has, I think, an $81 Soto. So $60 Soto is not, like, he's a keeper at $60. He's just an expensive one, I think. But I've been dangling him in trades, and there's effectively two offers on the table right now. And Pete, I guess my question for you, I'll tell you what these offers are, and we can talk about these players a little bit, and then my big question for you is, should I be taking one of these, or should I be just bailing on trading Soto and just hold on to him? So one offer, and this isn't even officially on the table, it's just sort of maybe out there, is a $5 Jackson Job and a $7 Marcelo Mayer. The other offer is a $3 Kobe Mayo, a $3 Jace Young, not Josh, but Jace Young, and a $7 Christian Encarnacion Strand. Those are the two options I've got, with the third option being forget it, Soto will just be my $62 stud bat next year.
I'm kind of surprised that's all you're getting offered for Soto. Like, if I'm a buyer in this and it's 4x4, so it's roto, I mean, you should have a pretty good idea of if you're gonna be in the running or not. Like, I'd pay more for Soto. So I'm sorry that I'm not in that league. I get that it's tough to part with some young guys that we feel good about, but some of these prices aren't even that great. Like at $7 Marcelo Meyer, I mean, like, no thanks. That's pretty expensive for a guy who's not, you know, a unanimous top 10 prospect. A prospect pitcher at $5, like, I get it's arguably the best one in Jackson Job. I don't know if that really moves the needle all that much for me. The one out of all these that sticks out, because I might cut the other two, is a $3 Kobe Mayo, because Mayo has been incredible this year. We've seen him improve on that strikeout rate, which is really what we need to see from Kobe Mayo. It's still pretty high, but it's not egregiously high. I do think he's going to get the call this season, which is also important. So you can get a look at this player going into next year. It does mean, you know, he'll go up by $2, but that's fine. Cause if Colby Mayo is as good as we, you know, think he is, then I'd happily pay $5 for him. And frankly, whether he gets called up this year or not, which at this point would be surprising if he doesn't, he's going to go for more. He would go for more than $5 at auction next year. So yeah, it's kind of already a value. So that's, I guess, the one that if I couldn't get any other offers, I am going to do that trade. I'd be sad about it. But, you know, in my limited Ottinoo experience, and it's getting more and more each year, obviously, keeping a, I don't even remember what the price was. I'm going to say like it was $72 or something like that. Keeping a $72 Acuna in the Podcasters League single-handedly ruined my team. Well, to be clear, I ruined my team. But because I kept Ronald Acuna Jr., and I was so invested for him for power, for run, that's 5x5, by the way, everybody, for power, runs, just everything. Like, Acuna is going to be my guy. And anybody would have been willing to pay that price for him in Roto anyway. It's not like, you know, I kept some egregiously overpriced player and bit the bullet. He was appropriately priced. He was the number one player, and I kept him. And I realize injuries can happen to anybody, but when you only have $400 to work with and you're that invested in just one player, it can go wrong so quickly. And like, I'm not saying that's going to happen with Soto. He seems obviously super durable. I don't know what's going on with that thumb. That seems to still be bothering him. Apparently he winced after a pitch the other day. So we'll see what he does for the All-Star game and everything else. But it's just too much for one player. So I think I'd be fine with rolling the dice on Mayo and just be a little disappointed that no one else gave me more. But in a way, it's almost like sticking it to them. Like, fine, you know what? If you're not going to give me, if no one's going to give me anything for Juan Soto, I'm going to trade him. And this is the best offer I have. So I hope he doesn't ruin everybody else's chance to win the league.
Yeah. It's interesting. So you said you would cut, you think you would cut Young and Encarnacion Strand?
Probably. Where's Young right now? Is he at double A?
I think he's in triple A.
All right. If he's reached triple A, then no. And I probably wouldn't cut Encarnacion Strand either. It's just kind of a lost season for him. I'm just not excited about those players at those prices. Like, if there's a $1 Jace Jung, then like, yeah, let's do it. Like, that's exciting. But I'm on, yeah, now you got to, I mean, you got me up to four next year. Like, I need MLB players to win.
Yeah. Young in AAA. So first of all, he's been in AAA basically the full season. He's got 303 plate appearances in AAA. He has a 268, 391, 508 slash line. That's a 394 WOBA, 131 WRC plus, 13 home runs. And he really should be up. I mean, certainly next year, right? He's already put half a season in AAA, and
he's
going to
be 24 next year. I did not know that.
So I think Young is probably up this year. Just a question of when, especially if the Tigers sell, right? Then they start to open up more opportunities for a guy like him, and when they trade like a Vierling or someone like that away. Yeah. So I think Young will be up this year, and I'm more excited about him than you are. Encarnacion Strand is, yeah, it's a lost season for him. What's his timeline? For some reason in my head, I thought I had that he'd be back.
Well, I thought he'd be back by spring training.
Let's see. Is it not till spring training?
Most recent update, surgery
period, ligaments, expected to miss 3 months, ligament damage in his hand. And that's it then. So yeah, he won't be up this year. He was not originally the guy I asked for. Actually, the guy I originally asked for as the third player in that deal was a $3 Zach Neto. And the counter came back with Encarnacion Strand. And there's some other names. Like, I could push back on CES and ask for, like, this guy's got a $5 Noelvi Marte. He's got a $5 Brett Beatty. He's got that $3 Neto. If I go to his pitching, he's got, let's say, like a $3 Brian Wu. He's got a... that's sort of it. I don't think he doesn't really have enough other pitching to trade. He's got other pitchers who are interesting trade targets,
sure,
but I don't think he's got enough arms to trade away any of them. So Wu would be maybe the only one. So, I mean, maybe that's the question is like, should I be going back and saying, okay, Mayo and Young, fine. You don't want to do Neto. Here's, you know, I would do it if you did Noelvi Marte. I would do it if you did Brian Wu. But CES is not the right fit.
No, look, I mean,
you're just happy with any of this.
So I think I realized what it was while you were talking is just I'm beaten down by prospects this year.
Yeah.
It's just been so freaking bad. And like Brooks Lee was giving us a little hope there. I know he's now in a bad stretch. You know, James Wood is looking okay. Some of these guys are holding their own. It's just, it takes time for guys. Like, not everybody is going to be, you know, the Bobby Witt Jr., the Corbin Carroll, whatever it might be. And, you know, we can accept, it's one thing to like accept that and understand that. But then when you're in the trenches and you pick up one of these guys who gets called up and you're all excited because you got him in fab or whatever, and then he sucks, like, it's just defeating. So, I would figure a player like Juan Soto, who, like you said, it's not a value at $60, but it's like a fine cost. Like, he's a keeper, is the word to use. He's a keeper at that price. Yeah. If I'm giving you a keeper, one of the five best players in baseball, the best I can do is some prospects. It's just, it's defeating.
Yeah.
But I totally understand it, to be clear.
I had asked the team that has Mayer and Jobe has Wood, and I had asked for Jobe and Wood, and he was like, no. So
then maybe you're just better. Maybe just bite the bullet and you keep Juan Soto.
Yeah.
It just feels like
what I do think. So the other guys I have on that roster, I have a $49 Tatis who I would like to trade, but I have to wait till he comes back.
The heck is going on with him?
Who knows? And the way Tatis hits, to be honest, like his ex Woba has been so much better. So this is worth, let's take a quick break. We come back. I want to talk a little bit about Fernando Tatis Jr. because I've gone up and down on him repeatedly. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're talking a little bit about possible trade targets, trade options as we move into the second half of the season. I do want to note that I mentioned Blake Snell as my head-to-head hero. He did get pulled after the seventh inning at 80 pitches. Not a huge surprise. But that did close the book on sort of the stats I'd given before. The Giants held on through the eighth inning, so we'll see if they can finish off the win for him. That is the open question remaining there. But we were talking about the players I could trade for or trade away in League One. And I do sort of feel like the offers for Soto just aren't going to justify Soto. Tatis. So Fernando Tatis Jr., like I said, I have a $49 Tatis Jr. The updates on him have been weird. Like, he got hurt, and then there was this, like, he likely won't be able to play in the All-Star game. So if he likely can't play in the All-Star game, does that mean that we should expect him back?
I read an alarming article in the New York Times about his injury, and it was an interview, I think, with a legit doctor. It wasn't, you know, some quack. And basically saying how they treat this injury with your average Joe, and it's like, the only way for it to heal is for rest. And you only know you've healed when you don't feel it anymore. And that means you've rested long enough. And now, however long it took you to rest to get to that point, he said basically double that. No, well, not double it, but take that and add that on. And then after that, that's when he can start picking up baseball activity again. So it sounds like a healthy Tatis is going to be sitting around pain-free for a while just because this is a stress reaction, and we'll go from there. And Tatis recently was asked about it, and he's not going to participate in the All-Star game, and he was upset about that. And he said that right now, though, this is what gave me some hope, actually a few hours before we came on the pod here, he doesn't feel any pain. That, like, before, he had a hard time just getting up to go to the bathroom, which I don't know why that's always everybody's line. You know, I guess it's because when you're strung up, like, it's the one thing you have to get up for. So that's the one thing you go right to. I don't know. It's just weird. But he says he's pain free now. So I guess however long he's been out, maybe add that on. But I spent a lot on him in a keeper league that I'm in. I mean, I have this guy like everywhere. I still think he could be the number one player in fantasy. And it's killed me because part of the package I traded to get him was Brian Reynolds, who ever since I traded him has, of course, become, you know, freaking Ted Williams. So I need this guy back, and I think it's going to be a while. And I'm going to be extreme. If we hear any kind of setback with this injury, not with something else, but with this injury, I'm going to be really concerned about his ability to come back this season. Because from everything, it sounds like it's just like it's out of his control. He literally just has to rest until it goes away.
Well, in the original reports were that it might cost him the season. And then he was like, no, that's not it. And the thing that's a little concerning with Tatis is, you know, he's got a history of injuries. He also has a history of like, oh, I'm going to be fine. And then he's not back. So there's a little bit of like, I don't know how much I trust him. Like, oh, I'm pain free. I'll probably be able to play really soon. Like, all right, dude, we'll see. But I am sort of torn on him. There's a couple things here. First of all, I can't trade him if he isn't going to come back soon, right? If he's not going to be back soon, nobody's going to trade for him. Fine. Let's assume he comes back soon. He has, so far this year, been much better than he was last year, right? There was all sorts like, oh, last year he's coming back, he's going to be great. And he really wasn't. He was fine last year. 332 WOBA, 25 home runs. He was fine. This year, he's up to a 358 WOBA. The strikeout rate's down a little bit. The walk rate's up a little bit. He's been hitting for a little bit more power, not a ton more, but a little bit more power. But his barrel rate is up. It's not where it was in his sort of prime seasons, but it's up from last year. He set a new career max EV this year. His average exit velocity is up almost to where it was in his prime years. His hard hit rate is up almost to where it was in his prime years. Like, there's a lot of really good stuff there. And his X WOBA, because of all that good stuff, is 400. 358 WOBA, 400 X WOBA. He is hitting the ball very much like he did in his prime. Not quite, but very much. And first of all, talk about Tatis's prime. Like, oh, he used to be this kind of player. He's 25, right? So when I say in his prime, what I mean is those great seasons he had when he was arguably the best player in fantasy. In 2020, 2021, and 2019 for that matter. And then he's still only 25. So like, if he's healthy, if things are coming together, there's no reason to think he can't get back to that. And the underlying numbers tell you he is back to that. This isn't just like, oh, maybe he'll like, you know, last year, there was a lot of time spent last year on Fernando Tatis Jr. with people saying he's showing signs, he's going to get there, it's going to happen. And it never did. This year, it's not that. He's doing the thing. The results aren't quite following yet, but he's doing the things that he needs to do. And so part of me is like, I think a $49 Tatis, I kind of want to keep. Now, can I keep a $49 Tatis and a $60 Soto? I don't know. If Tatis doesn't come back this year, the answer is probably no, and I'll probably cut Tatis before it comes to that. If he does come back this year, I'm probably going to try to trade him. And then I won't have to make that decision. But if I can't find a trade for him, I don't know. I may try to keep them both. Because, if you told me these are the top two 4x4 hitters next year, that's not a crazy thing to think, except for the fact that Judge and Ohtani exist, right? Like, that may interfere with it. But, like, these are both guys who get on base at a high rate, who hit for good power and hit high in order. I mean, like, Soto, I think, is like top 10 in basically every 4x4 stat, on base, slugging, home runs, and runs. Probably. Like, he is just an absolute beast. And so, and Tatis hasn't been quite there, but he hits at the top of an order that should be pretty strong offensively. He gets on base at a high rate. He hits for power. Like, he does all the things. And again, that 400X WOBA is just like, it's tantalizing. So I don't know. The guy on that team actually that I probably should be most aggressively shopping, and I've gone back to the team that offered Job and dangled this guy instead, is a $36 Christian Yelich, who actually has been just as good as those two. Not as good as Soto. That's silly. But it's been, in that elite outfield category this year for 4x4. But at $36 at his age, like, Yelich is a guy that I'm happy to move on from. Even though if he finishes this season the way he has started this season and he's up for auction again next year, I'll pay $35-36 for him again. He's been worth it. He's been excellent this year. But I don't know that I want to, I don't know that I'd rather hold him than get some value for him. Although, you know, for some reason in my head, Christian Yelich was like 35. He's only 32. He hasn't turned 33 till December. He feels like he should be older than that.
Because of all his damn back problems. Feels like he should be like 78.
He also came up at 21. So he's been around a long time. Which
well, he's had like multiple, he's already had like multiple careers. He's, you know, he was a young and up and comer, traded for Lord knows what, because Jeter ruined everything. And then, you know, he's an MVP, battles injuries and has this like horrible stretch. And now he's back to being a top 10 outfielder and it's hard to make something of him. So, he's already had like multiple careers. I would understand choosing Yelich first of that. What do you have him for? How much?
$36.
Yeah, that's pricey. I of those three, I'd be first looking to move on from him just because I don't know how Christian Yelich is going to age with all the injury problems he's had.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, maybe in basketball where it's like, well, it's just less miles on those legs, less hardwood on those legs. No, Christian Yelich has had some serious injury issues over his career. But to go back to Tatis Jr., I would totally understand trying to hold on. $49 is obviously expensive, but hopefully you get some time before the deadline to get a real long look at him. I still stand by, you know, kind of what I've said all along, that like last year was definitely a disappointment, even though under the hood it looked really good. He missed the entire season before that with a serious injury. He's 24 years old. He's dealt with a suspension. Like, this dude has had a lot going on. So considering the talent, can I give him a year almost as like a mulligan where he was also still pretty darn good and go from there? I'm willing to do that. This injury obviously concerns me, a stress fracture in his quadriceps or whatever the heck. I didn't even know you could get that in a muscle, whatever's going on there. That concerns me. But if he is actually healthy and he can get out of this right before he went down, if we just look from, he went down on June 21st. If you just pick May 15th up through June 21st, arbitrary date. I said, what did he do from mid-May up until his injury? Because it felt like everything was coming together. Well, it was. He had a WRC plus over that stretch of 153, six homers in 147 plate appearances. It didn't run as much in this random assortment of time that I picked, but an average exit velocity of 95.5. He was smoking everything. Like, all of the tools that we like are still there and have kind of only gotten better, because if you remember when he first got called up, it was like, you know, can this guy be this elite when he's sporting a BABIP of like 400? You know, is the BABIP going to make up for the fact that his strikeout rate is almost 30%? And it did, and he was super valuable, but now that strikeout percent is down to like 20%. And for that stretch, that most recent stretch of time we got from Tatis, a little over a month, it was under 20%. So I think it's all coming together. It's just, can the guy finally stay on the field? And if he does, I think he's at minimum a top five player in fantasy, especially, by the way, the ultimate thing here, at a position that sucks. So if you could have Juan Soto and Fernando Tatis Jr. in the outfield going forward, if you can stomach spending, you know, over a quarter of your budget on those two players, that's the position to do it at, it looks like.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, this year, I have the top offense in that league. Maybe that's not a huge surprise given the three names I've just mentioned that I have in my outfield. But my pitching's been atrocious. And so I've got to figure out, if I try to hold on to those two, can I build a pitching staff that will, you know, keep me competitive? Like, it doesn't even need to be good. It just needs to be mediocre, but it hasn't been. But let's turn our attention away from trade talk, although still related to that, and look at some guys who are having some surprising first half of the seasons and what we expect from them going forward. And the first guy I want to talk about, just because I am busy still watching what's going on to see if Blake Snell is going to get me that win for my head-to-head hero argument that I made in his behalf earlier. Camilo Duvall is on in the ninth. He immediately gave up a walk and a double. So now there's second and third, nobody out, as he tries not to blow the save and give away Blake Snell's win. what is up with Camilo Duvall? Because I was sure that this guy was on his way to being just an absolutely elite electric lockdown closer. And this has been a, I mean, the season got off to a really bad start for him, but it just hasn't been good in general.
Yeah. I don't know. He's never been a guy who really got opponents to chase all that much. And that's the first thing that kind of sticks out against me, or to me, I should say. I don't know. I hate, this is bad analysis, which is why I hate to do it. But I mean, honestly, with relievers, we're talking about such small samples, right? And so, like, you see the 1.55 whip, and it's like, Jesus, what the heck is going on? Like,
well, he's walking everybody is what's going on.
Sure, but, like, is this just a bad stretch that for relievers and particularly closers, it just gets right under a microscope very quickly because it's all we have to go on. Whereas, you know, Zach Wheeler could have a bad start and a half, and that sucks. Because you're like, this guy's supposed to be my ace. But, you know, two starts later, you've already forgotten about it. Closers don't really have that ability to bounce back. And so it's lame analysis. And it's just sort of like, you know, well, I don't know. He's just walking everybody and it's going to go away eventually. But I don't know. I mean, if you roster him at this point, what are you going to do? Like, for example, I have him in the Podcasters League where it has been an absolute... This league's in its
saves are impossible to come by.
Yes. Yes.
Second year. Yeah.
This league's in its second year. And that's why, like, when I committed to selling, I got AJ Puck because I think they're going to move on from Tanner Scott. I picked up Ben Joyce because he's obviously going to be a closer of the future. I picked up Ryan Pressly in case anything happens to Josh Hader because he's also been disappointing this year. But I have a $15 Camilo Duvall. And at this point, 1.55 whip or not, like, I'm keeping him. If you drafted him in your leagues, like, he's the closer. He's not losing that job anytime soon. So I just don't know if there's that much actionable for him. And so I'm just looking at it as like, all right, it's a down year. Clearly he's thrown less than 40 innings. Let's see how he comes out in the second half. Maybe he starts locking stuff down because the stuff is still there. His K per nine's got to be what, over like 12?
It's right around 12, 11.78 going into today. He's now gone and blown the save. He just gave up a double to Manny Margot that tied the game.
I was delivering a speech on why you
should. He got a strikeout in there. So he's gone walk, double, strikeout, double to the hitters he's faced here. He had actually, like, I was looking, and I was like, oh, you know, his walk per nine, his walk rate had come down in July. So, like, maybe that was a good sign. That's because he had only given up one walk in four innings. Now he's given up two walks in four and a third innings. So he is still, like, he is striking out plenty of guys. His walk rate, his strikeout rate is, like, even including today, once you include today, I believe is back up over 12. Let's see. Well, we'll have to see. Well, he's got 49 strikeouts.
He really hasn't been that. So he had one absolutely awful outing against the Angels where he pitched a third of an inning, gave up four earned runs and two walks. Since then, he's pitched 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 innings going into today's outing. Over those 9 innings, he's given up one earned run and two walks. So I think he was most likely fine. And that one earned run was to the Dodgers. Was it who I think it was? No, it was the Jason Hayward sacrifice fly. So, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, like, he's actually been really good in between this blow up and mid June. Further the beginning of June.
But really. Again, it's only 9 innings. And once you include this blow up in it, now it's 9 innings. There's 3 walks in there, which is getting to be not a ton, but it's not a great number. It's going to be 3 earned runs, at least possibly 4. It turns really quickly, as you said, with those small sample sizes and the big picture I see with Duvall. To me, the walks are a real concern and they have better relievers in that pen. And I don't know that I am as confident as you. I think he's the closer on opening day next year. I don't know that I'm as confident as you that he is the closer in September if he continues to blow saves and walk guys at the rate he has for the season. Now, if these if you are right and what we have is like, oh, he had a bad appearance against the Angels, he's, you know, he had a rough day today, that happens. I still worry a little bit that, like, that's five saves and two blown saves in. Actually, did he blow a save against the Dodgers in that game with the Hayward sack fly? Is it five saves and three blown saves?
It might be.
Over that stretch? Like, that's not a good ratio of closing out games.
Yeah, I mean,
so I have some concerns. Now, I don't know, you know, the Dodgers are 46 and 50, not the Dodgers. The Giants are 46 and 50. And so, like, they're not a team. This isn't, you know, if the Giants were in a pennant race right now, Duvall would be in trouble because you can't blow three out of eight save opportunities as a closer and keep your job. Not when things matter that badly. Now, on the other hand, I guess you could argue if he finishes those three saves, they are right now 49 and 48 instead of 46 and 50. Those are different numbers of games because they would have finished this game already. They might still win this one. That makes a big difference. So I don't know. I don't know that his job is all that safe. And I have him in a dynasty league, like a keep forever dynasty league where saves plus holds is a category. And I can't, I don't know what to do because I still think the future is super bright for Camilo Duvall. We know what the talent is, but he's been like, he is hurting your rates. He's crushing you in whip. His whip is terrible. His ERA is very bad for a closer, right? It's at 3.93 going into today. After today, it's got to be up over four now, right? Yeah, 4.38 ERA. And while the FIP, XFIP are 3.52, 3.50 after today, like that's better. That's still not good for a closer. Now, it's often good enough to keep a closer job if you are getting the saves, right? There are plenty of closers who, like, they walk a guy every time they go out there and they give up a hit every other time they go out there. And, like, the underlying stats aren't great, but they lock down the save and, like, that's fine. You can get away with that. Duvall's not doing that. I don't know.
I'm not ready to be concerned yet. Bottom line, the number one thing you need is literally the job. And so if he does enter next year with the job, that's it. And like, I'm starting to look at each of his outings individually, you know, since his last blow up. So this is obviously, we'll call it a blow up. I don't know what the technical term is outside of blown save. Poor against the Twins, fine. I mentioned the nine innings before that. And he said, like, now it's up to three walks. Okay, he had two that didn't hurt him. He got saves in both of those, or he got a save in one of those opportunities. The other one was against the Dodgers, where he came in a close game. The final score ended up being a blowout. And he struck out Ohtani. Then Will Smith reached on an infield single to him. He walked Freddie Freeman, who's pretty good, and then he struck out Teoscar Hernandez, and he struck out Andy Paez. Like, these are the why do I bring up this anecdotal stuff? And we could bring up two saves in 3 days against the Braves, where, you know, he struck out Matt Olson, who I know sucks this year. He struck out Sean Murphy in one of them. He closed both opportunities against a pretty good team. I know the Braves aren't as good as they've been the last couple of years, but they're still 46 and 37. They're a good team. So why do I bring that up? Well, these like nightly basis things really matter for keeping the closers role. So even if he was somehow close to losing it after that atrocious outing against the Angels, which I don't think he was, since then up until now, he's been really good in some big moments against some big hitters. And those moments add up and continue to build confidence in a manager to keep them in that position, even when they end up having bad outings like this one. So assuming he's healthy and this current outing doesn't become a trend. And, you know, so far in July, he had, it's a handful of innings, but that's all we're talking about in general. He had a walk rate under 7%. His walk rate in June was really bad, but it was better than what it was in May. So maybe he's just getting back to where he should be. And as long as he has that role and he's getting these strikeouts, I'm not too concerned.
Yeah, and I will say in his defense, because I've been sort of the bad cop on this one, in that stretch dating back to and including that, as we're speaking now, Mike Yastrzemski just tripled and scored on a Brooks Lee error.
No, we should stop talking about Camilo Duvall because we're ruining him.
Which means that Duvall, no. That got him the win.
Oh no,
he got pulled. He didn't stay in. He only pitched the first out. Ryan Walker will get the win. But Ryan Walker stranded a guy at second to keep it where it belongs. So Duvall doesn't get the blown save win. He gets the blown save, and that's it. Because he got replaced. But getting back to Duvall, in his defense, even including that blow up against the Angels, this doesn't include today, but I'm sure this won't change things very much. He has a 440 BABIP against. In today's game, he faced four hitters. Two of them put it in play. Both got hits. So that BABIP's only going to get worse. He has a 66.7 left on base percentage. He put three guys on base. Two of them scored. So that left on base percentage is going to go down. He also has a 48% ground ball rate. I don't know what today will do to that. And he has not given up a home run since June 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some bad luck factoring in here for sure for him as well. You're probably right. He's probably safe with the job. I was sort of pushing back a little bit because I think he is blowing a lot of saves. But, you know, he's probably safe with the job. But it's just been a weird beginning of the season. Now more than beginning of the season for him. For a guy who I really thought was one of the safer bets out there for a bullpen arm. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about a couple more guys who've had first halves that are not what I expected. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. Pete, next guy I want to talk about. I said we were moving away from my trade talks, but we're going to go back to my trade talks a little bit, if only because one of the players I have on more rosters than I care to think about this year is Pablo Lopez. And I have got to decide what to do with Pablo Lopez, who on the plus side has made 19 starts, thrown 104 innings. He is striking out more than 10 hitters per nine inning. It's the second highest K per nine and second highest strikeout percentage of his career. He is walking less than two hitters per nine for the first time in his career. It's the lowest walk rate of his career. And yet has a 5.11 ERA. He has been, when I talk about that League One team where I have the best offense and my pitching has been so bad that I still can't even compete for like a top five spot, Pablo Lopez is the reason. If Pablo Lopez were pitching like Pablo Lopez, I would be buying in that league. Instead, I'm selling. what do you do? What do you do with Pablo Lopez?
Yeah, I actually just traded for Pablo Lopez in a keeper league. It's only keep four, so I trade, and it's strikeouts per nine. And I traded a 12th round Jackson Churio for a Pablo Lopez, who's just not a keeper. Like, even if he turns it around, his price is probably going to be like a second or first round pick. I did that, partially because at the beginning of the year I lost Spencer Strider, and so I've just been kind of playing catch up, and I am in first in this league, which is great, but I feel like my pitching isn't quite there. I also have Garrett Crochet, who, he went two innings the other night. They're obviously going to be, and they've said as much, they're going to be cutting back on his innings at least before he's traded. So I need something to kind of replace that. So I had my reasons for doing it, but I don't know what to make of Sandoval. Part of me thinks like he's been pretty unlucky. You also look at his last four outings. One of them was bad. Three of them were really good. The three that were really good were against terrible offenses. Oakland, the White Sox, and Seattle. That might be, other than Colorado outside of Coors, that might be the three worst offenses in baseball. And the other outing, the bad outing, was against Houston. So that doesn't make me feel good. But I wanted to look like we're running out of time here, right? So in fantasy, we're further into the second half of the year. This isn't a halfway point. What's a schedule going to look like coming out of the All-Star break? Well, assuming he starts either the first or second game out of the break for the Twins, which I think he would, right? That makes sense. He's not an all-star. So. He's one of their best pitchers. So assuming
him or Joe Ryan, right? Who else is?
Yeah, I'd assume Joe Ryan will get the first day and then Paulo Lopez will go second. I guess it depends on how they want to line it up because they start with the Brewers, who are not an intimidating offense. I know we were hyping up Christian Yelich, William Contreras having a great year, but I'd start Pablo Lopez against the Brewers. If they decide to pitch him third, fourth, or fifth out of the break, he's going to get the Phillies. That's a little bit different. But let's say he gets the Brewers. He's going to have the Brewers. Then he's going to get the Tigers. After they have
for
a series
what it's worth,
the Phillies.
The Brewers' offense is a top 10 offense. They have 107 WRC+.
It's not an offense that, like, strikes fear in me. Like I'm going to start my starters, especially somebody who I drafted like Pablo Lopez. I'm going to start him against Milwaukee. I'm not thinking like I got to bench this guy, especially being a lefty, you know, like maybe that'll take care of Yelich and that takes care of all your problems against Milwaukee. I'd be curious what their numbers are against lefties. Maybe they're even better. I don't know.
But Pablo's a righty.
Is he? I thought he was a lefty.
Yeah. He bats left-handed apparently, but he is a righty.
Oh, okay. Well, either way, Brewers, I'm throwing Pablo Lopez against the Brewers. Then we get the Tigers, the Mets. I know the Mets are playing better, and he wouldn't get them. He'd most likely get the Tigers, and then he'd get the White Sox again. Eventually, the Guardians, similar to, you know, close your ears if you want, Chad, similar to the Brewers. Like, they performed really well. It's not an offense I'm scared of in any way. His schedule out of the break really doesn't look that bad. So, like, when you're trying to make decisions right now, especially if you're, like, trying to make the playoffs – or, you know, your categories are close in your roto leagues. Like, I don't know. I think for most people, he's just probably not a keeper. It's going to be hard for him to get his numbers to a point where you feel comfortable keeping him at the price you got him at this season. So he pretty much is just a guy you're going to have this year. And, like, matchups matter. And I kind of like his schedule, at least out of the All-Star break. So I'd let him pitch for me, get those numbers up as I get closer to my league's trade deadline. Assuming he's pitching really well again, like he did three of the last four outings, then I'm going to move him. But in terms of his action, I don't know what to make of him. He's been an interesting case study all season where everything under the hood actually looks pretty good, and yet the results aren't there. The whip is still good. That kind of gives me confidence that he's going to be fine.
So Pablo Lopez in auto new leagues right now, his average salary and median salary are both basically $17. See a keep at $17, $19 then for next year?
Yeah, nobody's going to add arbitration on him unless he has a huge second half. I mean, right. Again, it's a lame answer, but I guess it depends on the rest of your roster. If I'm looking and there's not a lot of pitching out there, would I be comfortable keeping Pablo Lopez for $19? Sure. So maybe he's not necessarily not a keeper. If he's any more than that, now I'm going to get a little iffy. There's just been so much pitching this year. Up until now, offense is starting to take off, and that's causing all sorts of problems. But for most of the season, there's been plenty of pitching to go around. So would I feel like $20, a little bit more than that? That'll maybe be my breaking point. Once we see $20, I think I'd be out on Pablo Lopez. But if I had to, would I keep him for $19? Sure, at this point, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, looking at – so I have him at $20 in one league. I have another league where I'm in the middle of trade talks about him. I have a $23 Pablo Lopez. I have a $27 Max Fried. Those guys were supposed to be my twin aces, along with a $28 Shane Bieber in that league. Bieber is hurt. We've talked about Lopez. Fried has been great. He has a 3.08 ERA, 1.16 whip, 0.75 home run per nine. The strikeouts aren't totally there yet, 95 and 108 innings, but like, Fried is doing what I need him to do in a 4x4. He's been excellent. My ace in that league thus far has been a $6 Ranger Suarez. So speaking of guys who are having surprising first halves, but in a different direction, we've talked about a couple pitchers who had surprising first halves that have been negative. And I think where we've sort of landed is Duvall, you know, especially if you're looking at a league with saves, nothing's really changed. He's the closer, you hold him. Fine. Pablo, it seems like his value has gone down for you. And his average price, maybe you'd still keep him, but any higher than that, you're getting a little iffy. What are you making of Ranger Suarez, who I have him at $6 in this league, and his name has come up in trade talks as well, and I'm sort of not sure what I want to do.
So his last three outings have been disasters. And you might think, like, calling six innings pitched with only four earned runs a disaster. He had six strikeouts is maybe an overstatement. It's not a good outing, but it's not a disaster. It was against Oakland. It was a disaster. And then Atlanta.
No, and the really bad start was against Miami.
Yeah, I was going to get there, where he didn't even have any strikeouts, which, like, he's been pretty reliable for at least one strikeout in an inning, but not against Miami. You're 4 2/3, 10 hits, 6 earned, no strikeouts. So, like, I'm not trying to, like, dance on the dude's grave, but, like, didn't we see this coming? He was not going to remain a top, you know, 5 to 10 starter, whatever the heck he was. So now it begs the question, if he's... he would be a guy I wouldn't want to touch with a 10-foot pole in trade talks, because I would assume the person who has him is going to treat him like he's a sub-3 ERA pitcher, which he still is even after those outings. And I'm not going to pay that for him, especially after these last three. Sure. So if you have a fish on the hook for Ranger Suarez and someone's still valuing him at around basically a 3 ERA pitcher, I think I'd make that move. How young is Ranger Suarez? Is he that young? He's 28 years old. He's going to turn 29 this year. Next year, he'll turn 30. Like, that's how years work. I think he is the absolute, like, this is the guy you sell high on. And I'm surprised you still have the window to sell high, given how his last three outings have went.
Well, I don't know that it's necessarily selling high. So let's talk about this. I mentioned that I've got Max Fried there. If you had a trade offer on the table, let's forget what the trade offer is for a moment. We can come back to that. You have a trade offer on the table for pitching. You're giving up the pitching. You're going to get something you like. Let's assume you're happy with the return. You can either give up a $27 Fried or a $23 Lopez and a $6 Suarez.
And
what would you rather hold on to?
Like, long-term or for rest of season?
I mean, this is a team where I'm looking at the future. This is my like, you know, getting myself ready for 2025 type team.
Okay.
Would you rather keep? And now that might mean that I end up trading all three of these guys eventually, right? That's a whole different thing. But right now, would you rather have $27 Fried for the thinking long term? Would you rather have $27 Fried or $23 Pablo Lopez and $6 Ranger Suarez?
Oh, man. I love Max Fried. I just think that's, like, the max number, no pun intended, I'd pay for him.
Right.
So I think I'm choosing the... Because, like, to go back to Ranger Suarez just for a second, like, I said all that about him. I'm not a huge believer that he's some amazing pitcher. He's a keeper at $6. I think anybody would agree with that, right? So I think I'd take the Lopez and... Ranger Suarez side in that one.
Interesting. Okay. The offer I have on the table, which right now it is on the table for either Lopez and Suarez or for Fried, is a $9 Evan Carter and a $5 Shane Baz.
Yeah, I'd want Shane Baz there. I value a $5. So I would look at it as, would I rather have a $5 Shane Baz or a $6 Ranger Suarez, because I'm going to cut that Pablo Lopez. And I would much, much rather have a $5 Shane Boss.
Yeah. Well, and $9 Evan Carter, I think, is still sort of a, you know, his season's been painful to observe, but, you know, it's only 162 plate appearances this year. Evan Carter, I think, is supposed to be back. He's begun swinging a bat. So he's not like, it's not imminent that he'll be back, but if he's swinging a bat, he could be, you know, on a rehab assignment in a week or two.
So he's still a guy who and he's fine. He's not great, but he's fine. Are you keeping him for $11?
I mean, this is still a guy who in, you know, 237 career plate appearances, he's got a 328 wOBA, 316 on base, 447 slugging, 10 home runs in what's a little bit over a third of a season. So yeah, I think if he keeps doing, you know, if he comes back and does what he did last year, then I'd keep him at $20. Sure. If he comes back and does what he did the first half of this season, I'm probably going to cut him at $11. If he comes back and splits the difference and is sort of the guy I think he is, which is decent on base, some power type hitter. Yeah, I probably would keep him at $11 in the outfield environment we live in today.
Yeah, no, I think I would too. 11's not going to break the bank. It's worth seeing what you have.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Carter. The other thing with Carter to keep in mind is when we're talking about, you know, Ranger Suarez being 28, Evan Carter doesn't turn 22 for another month and a half. Mm. He came up real young last year. And this is a little bit like, we can talk about one last player because I think he's worth discussing, and he's sort of related to Carter in a roundabout way. Jordan Walker is like, I've seen him get cut in a bunch of places. He has not been good in AAA this year, admittedly, right? He has a 77 WRC plus in AAA this year. Jordan Walker came up last year and was a very good major league hitter as a 21-year-old. And I find it hard to believe that he was that good. And it wasn't yet. I mean, yes, he had a 331 BABIP last year. It wasn't a BABIP inflated very good. If that BABIP had corrected and everything else stayed the same, he'd still be very good. It is possible that the Cardinals have just ruined him because the Cardinals seem just incapable of handling young bats in any reasonable way. Yeah, what a mess of an organization they are. But so, yeah, maybe they destroyed him. Maybe he's actually terrible. But, like, he was so good at such a young age that I am having a hard time just assuming Jordan Walker is not useful.
I mean, yeah, but his price needs to have a reset. So I'm with you. Like, if we found out he's getting called back up, like, yeah, I'm going to look at my leagues just because of the talent that we saw. But he's going to need a price reset pretty much everywhere because, you know, I'm not paying whatever the keeper cost is in keeper leagues unless you know, re-add him off free agency because he gets reset. And I'd be afraid of whatever his price is in Ottenew at this point. If there were managers that held on too long, he's just been, I mean, like he, for as good as he was in the minor leagues, he's been that bad at the major leagues and
that bad in the minors this year.
And we've seen guys bust before, right? Look at Joe Adell, who just crushed my dreams. I really needed that Logan Gilbert win, and the Seattle bullpen is a freaking joke. Anyway, like if only, you know, Joe Adell panned out, or Lewis Brinson, or Dustin Ackley. Like, we've seen this happen before with highly rated prospects, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's just not there for him. With that said, he's far too young to abandon ship already. So yes, but I need a price reset on him. I'm not keeping him even at a 14th round cost. I'm not doing that.
Yeah. So let's look at my auto new leagues. I'm just looking at my leagues right now. Assuming you're in a rebuild or have like maybe you're competing and have just like a roster spot free that you can mess around with. Here are the prices at which Walker is out there. In our podcasters league, he is $16. I assume that even in a rebuild, you're not making a trade offer for a $16 Walker.
Absolutely not.
All right. In our staff league, League 13, that head-to-head league we're in, he is $8. No. If you're in a rebuild, would you make a trade for an $8 Walker?
No, he needs to give me a reason to trade for an $8 Walker. Yeah. Or I have to be able to get him for literally nothing and then just see what he does the rest of the season and then decide if I'm going to keep him at $8 or not, or $10.
In our listener league and in my, well, that's just true. In our listener league, he is $6. Now, you and I are not rebuilding in that league, so we're not in the market for him. But if you were, would he be on your shopping list?
If he were to come to me, like if you were to fall in my lap or something like that, then like, yeah, okay, because I'm rebuilding and $6 is fine. But he's not high on my shopping list. I'm looking at maybe names that haven't even emerged yet, like, you know, Davison De Los Santos, who's not half the prospect that Jordan Walker was, but again, this has just been such a disheartening performance that guys like that maybe are starting to enter the conversation of like, would you rather get a, you know, $2 Davison De Los Santos or a $6 Jordan Walker? I think that's a conversation now.
Got it. And then my other leagues, he is $6 in League One, but he's a free agent right now, $6 minimum bid. And I am rebuilding there, and at some point I may start that auction and try to pick him up for $6 and just see. And then in my other three leagues, he is $4 in each of those leagues. And I think at $4, he's a guy I want to target in trades. Yeah. He isn't a guy that I'm like, I'm going to give up my, you know, stud, you know, that $60 Juan Soto we're talking about before. Walker is a piece of a return for a $60 Soto. He is not the centerpiece. He is not the focal point. But if I can get him as a second or third piece in a deal that I like, I'm very happy to pick him up, because I know he's been bad this year, both in the majors and the minors. I just don't believe that a guy can be that good at that young an age and then fall off the planet like this. I think the challenge with him is the time to turn around is getting low in terms of turning around this year, which means that if you pick him up at $4, $6, somewhere in that range, you are probably going to have to make a decision about whether you're going to buy in on him turning it around without evidence that he has done it yet. Now, we may get news in the offseason of an injury, of, you know, something going on in his personal life that was messing with him. Like, there's a lot of things that could come out in the offseason that could be new information that could be useful. But I think if you're picking him up right now at $4, $5, $6, something like that, the mindset you have to have is, assume the rest of the season sucks like the season has so far. Are you going to feel good about keeping him at $6, $7, $8 next year? I think at $6, $7, $8, I'm at least interested in taking him into the offseason and seeing if we learn anything. And at $6, I think I would keep him. I think I would, I think I would take that shot, and maybe even at $7 or $8.
Yeah, because I mean, this is a guy who performed like Shohei Ohtani crossed with Babe Ruth in spring training before. So if he does that again next year, even if he finishes the rest of the year poorly, like you said, if he has a monster spring and it looks like he has a job, which by the way is maybe another conversation worth having, because the Cardinals have a lot of pieces. They're not all great, but they have a lot of pieces, and some of them are performing really well. And Lars Nootbaar's there. Alec Burleson is doing a lot of DHing, but it's not like Contreras, Arenado, and Goldschmidt to get any younger. You know, they might need to start getting those DH reps. So I don't know where the job's going to be unless he really, really earns it again. But at $6, like if you have him for $6, you cut him, and then he has a monster spring, and it looks like he has a job. Well, he's going to once again go for like 10 to 12, maybe $14. So I think he could be worth keeping in that instance. It's just more, what are the other pieces you have? If you have a lot of deals on your team, like you got a $6 McClanahan, you know, you got a $1 Alec Burleson or something, and you're like, you know what, this team is going to be a $400 roster that I'm only going to be paying like $244, then like, yeah, I think talents like Jordan Walker are the exact kind of guys you want to target, because if they do blow up, well, that's going to take your team to a whole new stratosphere. He's just more the name itself. If I'm selling right now, he's not high on my list of guys to target.
Got it. Well, I think we've gone long enough on all of these topics. So, Pete, thanks for another great conversation. Always a pleasure.
143.
And, yeah, to our listeners, thanks for listening, and we will be back with you in another week.